Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show. I'm Bruce Cameron along with Justin Nimmergood. Justin.
Hello. Hello, hello, everyone. Happy Monday. Happy Monday after Mother's Day. Hopefully everyone had a great day or great weekend spent with your mom, or as our guests would say, mum, which we'll kindly introduce here in a couple minutes. But I don't know about you, Bruce, but it was one of the best weekends, I think, weather-wise, we've had out here in Texas in quite some time. I mean, it was pretty much picture perfect, in my opinion.
Sure was. So you got to enjoy some golf, and we went out fishing again. So it was a great weekend.
Absolutely. You went fishing again. So you've been going fishing quite a bit, I take it. Then,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. I went last week. It seems like I went last week, but yeah, I think I went last week and went again this week. So it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from the backyard, and we kind of walk down to the pond. There's three ponds in a row, and so we enjoy hitting up those ponds for some bass. It's fun.
Nice. That's great. That's really, really great. So I did a little golf on Saturday, which was just picture perfect. Couldn't have asked for a better day there. Just no wind, 75, sunny. It was kind of like a California day, actually, to tell you the truth, which right. I thoroughly enjoyed. So that was great. And then, yesterday we just spent with Mama Chi, Melora, you know. She actually, as much as I was... It was funny, you know, any of you that know my mom, I know Bruce knows her a little bit from the past.
Yeah.
She's super ADHD. She cannot stay still. So she will be go, 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 like the Energizer Bunny, all day long, doing something, doing projects around the house, inside or outside. And we luckily got her to do half day yesterday. So we actually got to enjoy Mother's Day for half of the day yesterday, which was really nice.
Kind of held her in a little mini quarantine of sorts.
Yeah, exactly. So that was fun, obviously. But yeah, I'm excited here today for the guests that we have on. Just a couple things about him before I sort of read off his bio, his formal bio and whatnot, you know, for our listeners out there. Mr. Paul Shepherd, right? And Paul's actually joining us here today for all the way from the UK. I've met Paul through a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, who has actually been on our show before as well, Dr. Christian Perrin, who is a professor out at the University of Liverpool there in Singapore. He's just doing some remarkable things, and he's still in his 20s, if you can believe that, right? Which is kind of crazy. But Paul, actually his uncle, so they're relatives, and they are in the process of starting a business together, kind of personal development, organizational leadership, kind of tying in some of the soft elements of, culture and behavioral change within organizations. So Mr. Paul is Paul Shepherd. He is a self-proclaimed ordinary person who somehow ended up getting a number of rather extraordinary things. After growing up in a notoriously rough part of Manchester, England, Paul escaped and went to live in Dubai and worked as a chemist. This was in the early 80s, and he had no real idea what he was doing and where he was going and what he was doing. It turned out that he was excellent at relationships and spent the next decade of his life traveling the world, solving people's problems and convincing large corporations to do things differently. All while buying stuff, of course, which I'm sure he'll tell us a little bit about when we get him on air here. It was a life of immense transience and chaos. He was once kidnapped in India, for example, which I would love to hear that story here. But it was fantastic. Paul transcended an environment where he felt locked into and garnered experiences, memories, and friends that continued to make life fabulous. When he returned to the UK, he faced a number of entirely different experiences. He became a father and a messy divorce. Hey, I've been there. I know all about that. And continued business and eventually moved on from that into the well-being sector. Skip a few more chapters and Paul now runs his own business through which he empowers individuals and corporations to better manage change, reduce conflict, cultivate cohesiveness, and improve on all levels of well-being. He has learned that we spend far too much time worrying about the things beyond our influence and planning for events that haven't yet unfolded instead of embracing the opportunities right in front of us. He is here today to prove that you're better than you may think you are and awaken you to those opportunities. So his website is called gritstonesupport.co.uk. He'll probably be sharing more about that through our time here together. So without further ado, welcome Mr. Paul Shepherd to the show. Paul,
thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much indeed. That's quite an impressive introduction. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Hey, you know, we got to make sure our guests feel welcome and they know that we hold them up here. You know, we hold them on a pedestal.
Good stuff. It's great to hear.
Yeah. So Paul, tell me, I mean, I know I just basically read off your bio, which is, you know, quite acclaimed, by the way. You know, tell me and tell our listeners out there, just in your own words, you maybe your Cliff Notes version, a little bit more about you, who you are, what makes you tick, and just kind of give them some more perspective on yourself, if you would.
Okay, yeah, again, just an ordinary guy, really. Came from a relatively speaking humble background in the northwest of England. Lovely family. Fought my way out of that and just kind of happened along through things. Very unfocused. The environment I grew up in was one where there was not a great deal of expectation. You just kind of got on with things. And it was good, safe, happy, generally speaking. But yeah, all good. And I was lucky, very, very lucky, and I still am very, very lucky. I've been honoured to meet some interesting people and had some great experiences that have just propelled me forward. And again, seen some incredible things for some of the Great Wall of China, pyramids, did a hell of a lot of travelling in the early days before the terrorism thing became so... So much of a drag. So I was able to explore the world before all that, before people became really sinister and dark. So very privileged. But the thing that's always kept me going and has always meant a lot to me is people. I'm fascinated by people. I don't quite know why, but I am. I'm fascinated by what we do, why we do it, what makes us tick. And that's been a continual theme throughout my life. The things that give me the most pleasure are our relationships. The things that cause me the most grief, the most pain are relationships when they don't go wrong. So I've been kind of studying behavior and people all my life. And now I'm lucky enough to be able to work in that environment.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you know, I obviously shared a somewhat similar story in terms of how I got into the consulting space. About 6 years ago, right? I feel like people are often motivated by their deepest pains or the greatest pleasures, right? Or maybe some combination of the two, right? And I'm sure you found that to be true not only for yourself, but for many others that you've been helping along the way. I know we have a lot of great topics here that we collaborate on, you kind of came up with. And I'm really excited. So, Bruce, I didn't tell you about this, but we're going to actually be doing a live demo here. That he's going to through an exercise, which I think is going to be quite fascinating with EFT tapping at some point in time. Let's start with your first topic, which is identity, the observer. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So the thing about identity for me is that this is where everything starts. The relationship that we have with the rest of the world starts with the relationship that we have with ourselves. And it seems quite an obvious thing, but it's something that... a lot of us don't really recognize and don't invest in. And, our internal dialogue, the way that we think, the stories that we tell ourselves, the whole interaction that we have with ourselves is really, really important. It defines a lot. And for me, that's where it all has to start. we have to take responsibility for the way that we think. And that for me, again, is such a really important starting principle. If we don't take responsibility for how we think, then, you know, somebody else will take over for us, and that's not a good thing. So Jack Canfield, who's bought the Success Principles, had a major impact on me. His number one principle was that we must take 100% responsibility for our situation, for our circumstances. And again, it's true, because if we don't, then how can we make a change? How can we make meaningful change? Because if we're always able to displace that somewhere else, then things never quite have the impact that they should have. So for me, this identity and how we see ourselves is very, very important. Our consciousness, the way that we are with ourselves, with other people, it is really, really important. And the way that we speak to ourselves, I think, is also very, very important. It drives everything. It's so influential in the way that we interact with the world. So if we have a healthy relationship with ourselves, and if we have a positive identity, then it starts things off on a good platform and a great framework. So that's, for me, where this whole thing starts. We have to look at who we are, who we see ourselves, and how we manage that whole process. Because if we're continually telling ourselves things that aren't helpful, if we run programs that aren't particularly positive, and I don't mean naive, but if we're not positive about ourselves, then, again, it's very, very difficult to be positive about the rest of the world. So that is the start of the whole thing from where I'm at. You're always going to struggle if you don't maintain a realistic and positive atmosphere and environment, and you don't look after yourself. You've got to ask yourself good questions and not beat yourself up, and be aware of the way that that all works. The narrative that we have is based on the fact that, you know, that the brain is there to risk assess things. So we're always looking for problems, potential problems, because that's what keeps us alive. It's the flight, fight and freeze thing. And sometimes we miss the opportunity to change our environment and to be positive and happy, because we're so consumed by this brain thing whereby it's continually protecting us, which is what its job is. But right. We should also ask ourselves, about the good things as well. And we don't do that. The good things kind of slip off us like Teflon. So what I always try and do is, when something good happens, is I ask myself, you know, could this get any better? How great is this? Because by doing that, it re-emphasizes the good stuff. And taking time to invest in the good things is, I think, time well spent, because it gives balance, and that's what we need.
I would agree with you. And just to add to that, because I love a couple of the points that you made there that I'd love to dig into a little bit. You know, one was around the questions. My man Tony Robbins, he would say the quality of the questions that we ask determines the quality of life we live. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm a big proponent that quality questions lead to quality outcomes. Right.
Yeah.
And if you really want to get at the heart of the matter, ask better questions, put simply.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The other one is just the framework in itself, right, that you're talking about. I'm just curious, does your framework apply some of the principles or framework of like a Johari's window? Is that sort of what we're talking about here?
It's just, for me, it's very, very simple. It's about noticing what's going on, and it's about having that sensory acuity and not being driven by this cortisol-fueled world that we're in at the moment. Obviously, with the virus and everything, the doom narrative is frightening, and you find yourselves behaving in a very, very unhelpful, unhealthy way, suppressing our immune system. We're terrified. We're waiting. We're looking for horrible things. So we've got to try and recognize that, raise our level of thinking, raise our level of being, and our level of experience, so that we're not just kind of. Oof. If you're right, if you ask yourself rubbish questions, you're going to get rubbish answers. I do it often. If something goes wrong, I'll say, God, you know, why do you always screw up? And guess what? My mind goes like a Google search, and it tells me, well, you didn't listen properly, you didn't do this, you didn't da-da-da-da-da. And before I know where I am, I've got a whole list of reasons why I screw up. And then those reasons become my reality. And then my mind seeks out reasons to justify the things that I've just come up with, and it all kind of spirals down. So instead of saying, why do I always screw up? What I say is, right, what's this teaching me? What am I learning from this? And that's a different conversation altogether internally. And that's where, for me, it starts.
Yeah. And, you know, I agree. And you mentioned about the brain, you know, around the mechanism of flight, fight, or freeze. As I like to say, our brain is quite simply a deletion, distortion, and generalization device. That's it. That is it. You may or may not agree with that, by the way, but that's just my perspective on the matter, right? It's meant to skew data, it's meant to distort data, and it's meant to, you know, delete data, basically, because we consume so much data, especially in today's society with the you know, everything is just at our fingertips with the internet, right? So very fascinating stuff. We have some really good topics. So if it's okay with you, Paul, I'm going to move along to the next one here,
which is
anxiety management. I love this one, by the way. I was just talking to someone that's really dear to me earlier today, just about anxiety, being anxious about certain things. I'm sure she's probably tuned in on this right now, by the way. But anxiety management, and then you say RAS, I believe is the acronym here, and overwhelm, the skateboard principle. Tell us more about this.
Okay, so at the moment, anxiety is just like, wow. My work now is I'm getting loads and loads of calls, lots of stuff to do with people who are living in this cortisol-fueled world, because you turn the you know, any of the social media, it's awful. And our amygdala is kind of full on. It's doing overtime. It's going crazy. So we're all in flight, fight, or freeze mode because we're all frightened. And so the cortisol is driving this. Our heart rate, our blood pressure, is suppressing our immune system. And at a time when really we should be doing everything that we can to increase and to support our immune system, we're finding it you know, completely suppressed. So anxiety management is something that we've got to take very, very seriously. And if we don't consciously do something about it, it's like a skateboard rolling down a hill. That's not my metaphor. That's a metaphor from Mr. Dr. Bandler, who I had the privilege to meet in October. Richard Bandler, the guy who co-created NLP. And he was talking about the fact that if you don't take control over it, it is like a skateboard going down the hill. And I thought, yeah, it is. You know, it's out of control and you continue kind of chasing it. So taking control over that is really, really important. And that links into strengthening personal resilience as well, which is a whole, you know, another topic completely. But the thing that I feel is most important is, first of all, recognizing what's going on. Recognizing what patterns we're running and asking ourselves, is this serving us? Is what we're doing actually helpful? Is it supporting who we are? And if it's not, interrupt that pattern and start to do things differently. And that's where I believe I have a real intuitive skill, because I can see patterns that people are running that they sometimes don't see themselves, which are not actually helpful. So that pattern interruption is really, really important. And I do that in a number of different ways. We're going to do some EFT later on, hopefully. And that's one of the things that I use to interrupt patterns and to help people to take control of what's going on. Well, it starts with recognition. It starts with understanding, right, okay, this is happening. And it's happening to me. I'm experiencing it. I'm observing this now. And I need to do something about it. And it's a good thing. And it's a positive thing. But you have to adopt that meta position, that position of wisdom. Because once you can see what's going on and you're not just reacting to it all, then you can be more skillful. And managing anxiety is so, so important. I've spent a lot of time over the years in environments where people have had issues to do with suicide and things like that. I was a volunteer for a very well-known crisis organization that helps people going through crisis, and learn a great deal. And it's this thing, again, about anxiety, because we think about things in the future that have not happened yet, because it's in the future, and we second-guess what's going to go on, and we don't need to do that, because we don't know what's going on. So where we place our focus, where we place our attention is where all of our energy goes, and we create our future by where we look. And so too, by looking in the past, by thinking about and indulging in the things that went wrong in the past, you know, we expect that to happen again. But equally, we could just as easily place our attention on the great things. Well, because our brain is maybe risk assessing problems, it's not natural to do that. So we have to think on purpose. And that's another Richard Bandler thing. We need to think on purpose. And that for me is a really, really positive, proactive way of getting through all this. Because that's what we've got to do. And we have got a choice. Anxiety is a choice, in my view. We choose what where we place our focus, where we place our attention. And even if we convince ourselves that, you know, it's out of control, that's just a belief. We believe that, and we can change beliefs.
Yeah, I agree with you. And actually, I've come to find that many emotions that we believe are uncontrollable are actually within our span of influence and control, believe it or not, right? Even emotions, certainly emotions like hate and hurt and grief, grief not maybe as much, but, you know, like hate and anger are certainly within our control. Even to some level, you know, emotions like love and joy and happiness, right? And it's interesting to know, and perhaps you could just share just at a high level, right, for our listeners out there that aren't as well versed in NLP, which I know a lot of this is based on, right, neuro-linguistic programming, obviously, and Bandler, the godfather of NLP. Just, you know, could you, in just kind of a Cliff Notes version, share, you know, what exactly NLP is, so our listeners out there can understand sort of the framework of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, sure. It's many things to many people, but the reality of it all is it's about taking control of how you think and how you react with the world. The basic premise of it is that we have a massive amount of information available to us, and this information comes from a whole variety of different sources. Massive amounts of information depending on who you listen to, between 2 to 4 million bits per second. And this information is coded. It's coded through touch, taste, smell, all these, you know, the senses. And our ability to interpret it, to kind of make sense of it, is much smaller than the amount of information available. So we, as you said earlier, Justin, we delete, start, and we generalize. We use schemas to short mental shortcuts. So if something doesn't really fall in with our view of the world, then we delete it, or we generalize, or we distort it so it does. And in doing that, we actually create a map of our world. So if there's three people in the same room at the same time having the same experience, they will all have three different versions of the truth based on what they delete and distort and generalize about. And what they choose to focus on, and what they choose to you know, dispense with. And that means that really the kind of the map, our map is not the territory, it's just information. How we actually interpret that information arrives at our view of the world. And our view of the world drives our state. So it could be curiosity, it could be anger. It could be a whole host of different things. But that state is what drives our behavior. And that's, for me, the interesting thing, because if you follow it back, we choose what we delete, distort, and generalize. That gives us our view of the world. Our view of the world, or our map of the world, creates our state, and our state creates our behavior. So if we can go back and change those things, then we can have a completely different outcome. For me, that's the essence of NLP. But it's many things to many people. The use of language, incredibly important. You'll notice at the moment, the doom narrative you know, the way that things are being discussed, the invisible killer, the, you know, it's really quite frightening. And the and language produces an emotional response, nominalization. Mm-hmm. So if we use different language, we get a different emotional response. So mm-hmm. instead of being frightened, we use different language and we might feel optimistic. So it's all, it's about understanding how we relate to the world and how we run our own kind of program. The brain doesn't come with a kind of user manual. We're stuck with what we've got. And so we have to make sense of the world the best we can.
I wish it did at times, to be honest.
Don't we all?
Wonderful. Yeah, and thank you for that. I mean, I just think it's helpful as far as a baseline framework for our listeners out there, since a lot of what you teach and train on is sort of stacked on top of NLP as the foundation, if you will. So I think it's just helpful to know that. Let's move along here. Mindfulness. This is one of my favorite topics, by the way. And here you state, worry is interest paid on debts not yet due. All right.
Yeah.
Talk to us.
Yeah. Excuse me. So mindfulness for me is a wonderful thing. It's lovely. It's trancy. It's really, really pleasant. And it's kind of enabling us to create exercise. It's mental exercise. It creates a space between our thoughts and our identity or who we are. Because if we are continually being bombarded by thoughts, as we are all the time, and we don't choose which ones we act on, we're just, again, like that skateboard rolling down the hill. So mindfulness and placing attention and focus on the moment and being as present as we possibly can in the moment is a great thing, because it means that we're not consumed by what we did wrong in the past or whatever we believe we did wrong in the past. And we're not overly concerned about what's going to happen in the future. And we're just present in the moment, because now is all we have. This experience that we're having here now, guys, is all that we have. You know, the great thing about the past is it's over. And the future hasn't happened yet. So this is us. This is here now. This is what, for me, is what it's all about. And the great thing about mindfulness is, for me, the way it works for me is it gives my brain, my left hemisphere, something to do. So if traditionally in a mindfulness session, you start to concentrate on your breath and your breathing, you follow your breath in and you follow your breath out, and you continually focus on that, then your left, the logical part of your brain, your left hemisphere, has got a bloody job. It's doing something. So whilst it's doing something, it's fine, it's happy, because that's what it wants to do, which allows your right hemisphere part of your brain to do all the experiencing stuff. So I think it's really, really pleasant. It's very simple. And I just believe so much that if everybody was practicing, if it was taught at schools, the world would be a much better place. It really would, because it allows us to distance ourselves from this stream of nonsense that comes through. And if we can step back and allow them to, those daft things, those disruptive thoughts to just flow through, then we're better. And we can adopt that meta position. And we are then again experiencing stuff rather than being responding to stuff. So I love mindfulness. It's, I think, a great thing. Everyone should be doing it.
Your comment, by the way, I think I know where Christian borrowed his comment. I was talking to him on the phone the other day, and we were talking about a past relationship that went wrong. And he was like, you know, the thing about the past is it's in the past for a reason. He said exactly what you said. So now I know where he should have given attribution to.
That guy's scurrilous, you know. I tell you, he wouldn't be anything without me. He owes me so much. He really does.
He owes you royalty. He owes you royalty. Christian, if you're out there listening, we're just kidding, obviously. But that's wonderful. So moving along here, let's talk about resilience strengthening and never being able to smile again. That seems like a paradox. What's going on with that?
Okay, so this was it's a link to an experience that I had a long time ago when things were really, really difficult. It was a breakup that I had with an important relationship. And it was hopeless. The world was just hopeless. There was everything, everywhere I looked, it was just doom and gloom. And I remember thinking genuinely to myself, you know, I'm never going to smile again. I can't see my way out of this. It was, I won't go into the details because it would be disrespectful to the people involved in it at the time. But it was a very, very difficult time, very, very difficult time. And I looked at where the problems were, and the problems seemed to fall into three areas. The first thing was how I was dealing with my own internal narrative. So a relationship had broken down, and so therefore it was my fault. So I was continually beating myself up, you know, asking myself the wrong questions. You always mess up with the relationships. Why don't you, you know, and my kind of filters were then confirming the reasons why I was so crap at relationships. So that was all going on. So my internal narrative was very, very unhealthy. And that is a big, big deal. The second thing was about relationships. Because it was a breakup, my relationships that I'd had with everybody suddenly were fragmented. And so that, again, was a really a draining thing. And the relationships that I had that were good relationships became massively important. So the experience was very, very important to me because it showed me how important those, you know, the value of relationships are. And the final thing was events. I had no control over what was going on. But how I responded to those events, I eventually realized, determined the outcome. So something would happen. And as you said earlier, Justin, you know, hate, anger, things like that. If you respond emotionally, or how you respond emotionally, determines the outcome. So if you deal with it intelligently, you're going to get a better outcome than if you fly off the handle. But those three things combined, for me personally, were it was a very, very difficult time. Since then, I now, a lot of the work I do looks at those three key areas about relationships and about our internal narrative and about events and how we can manage them better, how we can actually take control or assert control over them by, again, asking ourselves better questions, understanding which relationships are toxic, which relationships are important, which aren't, and then doing something about it. So, again, kind of risk assessing your relationships and making sure that the relationships that are important, you're investing in, because sometimes we kind of take people for granted. So proactively assessing the quality of your relationship and the impact that that relationship has on your life, for me, again, is very, very important. And I share that a lot in the work that I do. And the last thing is about events. It's about being organized or not organized, but knowing that what's coming through you can deal with by kind of having a look at things and thinking about things and appreciating what's going to blindside you, what's going to happen, and what isn't. So those three things combined for me are the three areas where if we focus on and we put things right and in place, then our personal resilience, our ability to respond positively to things, increases. So that's the personal resilience piece.
Nice. Yeah, I like what you said there, especially around relationships. There's a little exercise I learned back in the day when I first started getting into personal development, which was simply how you can, on a scale of 1 to 10 or 0 to 10 even for that matter, how much do you give to a relationship? So you could take your mom or your dad or your cousin or aunt or uncle, for example, and say, how much do you give? Score it. How much do you get out of it? Score it. If it's net positive, that's a relationship you want to keep, you want to hold on to, you want to continue to invest in. And if it's a negative, then that's probably your relationship you want to, you know, limit or mitigate the time that you invest with. So a lot of times when, you know, I work with individuals, we talk about relationship management and where to invest or de-invest. That's definitely an exercise we dig into. So I'm glad you brought that piece up. That one's an important one. EFT. Okay, so this is our esteemed demo that we've been waiting for here, I believe. But before, okay. And I'm sure you want to set it up for everyone, we're talking about EFT and finding, well, this is your own personal story, so I'll let you share about that. But EFT, which for our listeners out there, EFT is essentially a technique called tapping, which I'll let Paul share more about. But why don't you tell us a little bit more about that and kind of set us up for the exercise that you want to take us through.
Okay. So how long have we got, by the way, guys? Have we not enough time to do this?
We got about 13 more minutes left here.
Okay. So we'll have to be very, very quick then to do it. I can just about demonstrate it. So the story with EFT for me was I was doing a course in Gibraltar with a friend and mentor, Kath Temple, the success psychologist, and she was showing EFT to a group of people, and she was looking for someone to demo it with. And she said, has anybody got something, a memory or an event, something that you could perhaps, you know, you'd like to forget about or do something constructive with? So I said, yeah, you know, because I wanted to help her. I said, yeah, I've got something. And she said, okay, Paul, come up and we'll do it. So you see, when you're doing EFT, you kind of sit facing each other and you sit down. So I'm sitting down, I'm facing the rest of the group, there's about 20 or 30 people. And Kath was facing me. So she said, right, okay, Paul, so what is it? So I said, I found my mum dead behind the door once. And it came out really, really kind of, oh my God. And because I was looking at the audience, I could see people's faces sort of drop and say, it was like car crash material. What on earth's going on here? And so I said, look, it's okay, guys. It was 25 years ago when this happened. I'm okay. It was, you know, it was very, very sad at the time, but I'm well over it now. It's okay. And Kath, who, you know, suddenly kind of was relieved. So she started to do the technique. Now, the technique, which I'll show you if we have time, involves making a statement of acceptance about whatever it is that you're trying to resolve, the challenge that you're working with, or the emotion that you're trying to, the emotion that you're disrupting. So you make a setup statement and you then kind of scale it 1 to 10. And the technique that Kath was shown us was something whereby you go through a series of events, and where you have peaks of emotion coming through, then you deal with it, you collapse them. Now, I was over it, completely over it, because it was a long time ago. And as I started to explain the story to give her an understanding about what was going on, I started to kind of well up. And I didn't know really why this had happened, because I was over it for a long time. And it all of a sudden, I've got tears rolling down my face. I've got snot coming out everywhere. It was very unpleasant. And all of this stuff came through. I don't know where the hell it came from, but it was coming through. And I was really, really upset. And I didn't realize I was upset. So I've been carrying this around for 25 years. And there was a whole host of things that came out. When I found my mum, it was on the, without getting too much detail, it was in her bedroom. She passed away, you know, in her own home, which was a good thing. But the carpet was an oatmeal coloured carpet. And I realised then how this particular detail was still living with me. Everywhere I went, and you'd be amazed about how many oatmeal carpets are out in the world, wherever I went, I saw an oatmeal carpet, oomph, I'm seeing my mum there again. And so there was a whole host of stuff that I was still carrying around that I didn't realise that I was still carrying around. And we did the technique, and it worked brilliantly. And now, as I can talk to you without blubbering and snotting all over and things, and now I'm perfectly okay about it. But we carry around, all of us, lots and lots of things that are really quite, heavy and difficult. And what EFT does is it enables you to spring clean and to move on. And a lot of those emotions, when we talk about NLP before, about, you know, things in the past, who's written on our wall, the things that people did to us. EFT is a pattern interrupt, and it enables us to clear that out and collapse it. And that's why I'm such a great fan of EFT. It's very natural. It's very easy to do. Anybody can do it. In fact, shameless plug, I'm doing a webinar on Thursday, if anybody wants to find out about it. I'm going to teach people how to do it, because I want everybody to be able to do it to help themselves get through this COVID nonsense. So I'm going to do that, and if I can't pull that on at the end. So, that was the EFT. That was the story with EFT. So do you want me to show you how to do it?
Yeah. Why don't you show us how to do it? You know, we'd love to go through this exercise with you. I don't know if you can do both of us at once, or if you want to go one, you know, just choose one of us, or how you need to go about it. But, you know, yes.
Well, okay. We're going to run out of time because it'll take maybe a little bit of time to do. But you'll get an idea and you'll show the technique. If you come onto the webinar on Thursday, then we'll have more time to do it. But I can deal with both of you. Sorry?
That's perfect. Just give us the cliffhanger so we and all of our listeners need to come to your webinar on Thursday.
Okay. Can I do a share screen thing?
Yeah, you should be able to. Just hit the share screen button. There you go.
Okay. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, right. So this is the basic recipe. I'm just going to go through the basic recipe with you. What happens first of all is you identify the problem. So, Justin, if there's something that I'll just concentrate on you, Justin, just for the sake of simplicity, if you don't mind. I apologize, Bruce. But if you've got something that's causing you some anxiety, and I don't need to know what it is, which again is one of the great things about EFT. It's content free because it's the process that we work with, which is so powerful. So if it was something very personal, again, you wouldn't have to disclose that if you didn't want to do. But do you have something perhaps, Justin, that is maybe troubling you at the moment?
Yeah, I do. And it's kind of what I texted you earlier. I guess I don't need to share, but I mean, for our listeners out there, I'll share it. It's regarding this consulting opportunity, let's say. So I'm extremely anxious to hear about this.
Okay. So you think when you're thinking about something, it's causing you to feel anxious.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So the problem is anxiety to do with this particular issue. So you've identified the problem now. That's the problem or the challenge, the feeling. So this feeling of anxiety. So what you now do is you would rank it in terms of intensity. So from 0 to 10, where 10 is absolute hell and you can't deal with it and it's driving you crazy, and 0 is you're not really bothered. So on that scale, which we would call SUDS scale, subjective unit of distress, or what would it be, 0 to 10? Where would you rank it at the moment?
Well, it changes daily, but right now it's probably at about an 8, I would say.
Okay. So this is really quite troubling you then. It's a big one. And
because my whole... quite a bit of my future and several people involved are going to be affected by it or not affected by it. So yeah, it's pretty far up there in my eyes.
Okay, so you're giving it an 8, which is quite a powerful emotion. What we then do is we do the setup, which is where we actually accept that the, you know, whatever it is that's causing the challenge, because you have to first of all accept something before you can deal with it. This is the process with EFT. If you're not accepting it, then it's very difficult to deal with it skillfully. So you have to accept that, yeah, this is troubling me. You know, it's causing me to feel uncomfortable, unwell, or whatever. And with that comes a nice kind of feeling. It enables you to deal with it again in a less intense and aggressive way. So accepting it is an important part of it. And what we then do is we then do the tapping. So the tapping is, it's basically acupuncture without the needles. So we tap on, sorry?
I was just saying, that's fascinating. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. So we tap on the meridian points.
Okay.
And the understanding is that when we bring this problem, this challenge into our conscious thinking, we light up a network that all kind of is unique to this particular feeling, and that by stimulating the chakras, these places, then we actually enable any kind of blockages or any resistance to flow around. Now, I know that might sound a little bit woo-woo to some people, and I've got great respect for, you know, whatever beliefs we are, whatever beliefs people have, but it works, and it works incredibly powerful. So believe what you will, but you know, it does work. And we tap and we do 2 rounds, and then what happens is the intensity of feeling changes. So I'm going to come back out of the that slide now. Can you see that one, Justin? Can you see that?
I can. And just a quick time check, we got about 3 minutes left here.
Okay, right. So top of that, those are the points where you tap. So let's go straight into the actual tapping process, and I'll show you how it works. Okay. So can you see me again?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So what we would do is we start off by tapping on the, you know, your the edge of your hand here. Can you do that, please? Justin, can you do that? Yeah? Or you just put your yep. feet flat on the floor and bring that thought of whatever it is about this thing that's causing you to feel unwell or uncomfortable. Bring it into your conscious thinking now, please. And whilst you're doing that, can you breathe in nice, long, deep breaths? Breathe in for 7 seconds. Nice, long, deep breaths in for 7 whilst you tap in here. And then out for 11. Nice, long, deep breath out. Nice, long, deep breath out. And just allow this whole thing to happen. And just allow it to happen and notice whatever it is that you notice. And just do that again twice, please. In for 7 and out for 11. And again, one more time, in for 7 and out for 11. And just repeat after me, please. even though
this thought
about this work causes me to feel uncomfortable, I love, forgive, and accept myself. Even though this feeling is unpleasant, I love, forgive, and accept myself. And even though it's difficult for me, I acknowledge that. And I love and forgive. And fully accept myself. Okay, so now we're going to start tapping. Start off with the top of the head. 7 or 8 times, gently with your fingertips on the top of your head. And keep that thought, whatever it might be, same for you, Bruce, whatever it is you're thinking about, keep that thought in your conscious thinking. So you've lit up those neural pathways, and that's what you're tapping on. Then you go to over the eye, same thing, nice deep breaths, side of eye, these are all important chakra points, under eye, under the nose, under the chin, and keep that thought in your conscious memory, collarbone, nice deep breaths, and then under your arm. And we do that again one more time. Top of head. Above eye. Side of eye. Under eye. Under nose. Under chin. And collarbone. Keep that thought present in your conscious thinking under your arm. Nice deep breaths. Okay, so that's what we would call one round. And we do multiple rounds, but just put your hands on your legs now and just a nice deep breath. And then just bring that thought back into your conscious thinking and just let me know how you're feeling. How has it changed in any way at all when you think about it? Has anything happened?
I feel like I'm levitating.
So before we spoke to Justin, you gave it an 8. Has it moved any? Has it come down or has it gone up or has anything happened to it?
What was, you know, sort of manifested, I felt the pressure up here has sort of dissipated and has been, I felt it actually releasing through my body. It was just, it was quite amazing, actually. And that was only one round, obviously.
It is amazing. And what will happen, again, we haven't got time, but what will happen is we'll repeat that and it'll take you from 8, which is where it was, down to nothing, down to 0. Sometimes other things come through, other feelings come through. So your situation with your anxiety about this particular job scenario might be based in the fact that, you know, something's gone wrong in the past or whatever. And something else might come through. But again, when that comes through, if something else comes through, and I will notice whether that comes through, we stop and then we change it to that. So we basically chase this unpleasant emotion around and we collapse it, because what we do is we produce something called a prediction error. So when you think about that, whatever it is, you get an unpleasant response, you release cortisol, which does all this nasty stuff. And what we're now doing is we're replacing that cortisol with serotonin, which is a nice feeling. That creates a prediction error. So instead of your brain thinking, every time I think about this, I feel crap, I'm now feeling good. So it puts it in a different place because it's not how it normally is. And that then enables us to realign or reconsolidate that memory into a different place. So it no longer has the same impact on you that it would have had. So that's a very quick overview, but it's so powerful. And I've used this really, really effectively with people who have had PTSD, who've been abused, phobias, a lady who had a phobia about spiders, a whole host of things. And this has been recently approved by NIAID for funding for further research for PTSD. So this is a really hidden secret, and it's something, again, that we should all be using as part of our daily well-being ritual. We need to take control of ourselves and look after ourselves better.
Yeah, you know, I have to thank you again, Paul, for sharing that, you know, gem with us, because first of all, it works. I mean, I just witnessed it firsthand in one round, and I literally felt the pressure moving through my body. It was remarkable. Bruce, I don't know if you had the same experience, if you were doing it over there or not.
I was doing it. Yeah.
Pretty cool, right?
Oh yeah, very cool. Very cool.
So just amazing stuff here, Paul. I know we are getting at our time here, and I want to make sure, importantly, especially, you know, let's make sure we end on a high note. I feel like that exercise itself was sort of the pinnacle of our time here today. I know we didn't get to some of your esteemed topics. We'll have to have you on again. I'll tell you that much. You'll definitely be a guest again for us. Can you tell everyone where they can find out more about you? And also, perhaps before you do that, you can share a little bit more about this webinar on Thursday, which I'm sure, you know, folks that have tuned in, at least visually as well, will probably want to know more about.
Okay, so I'm just going to share the screen. Hopefully you'll be able to see that. Can you see that, guys? Yeah. Yeah, okay, so there's a web address there, gritstonesupport.co.uk. So that's going to take place on Thursday at 7 o'clock. We'll get into a lot more detail about it so you can actually spend a little bit more time and enjoy it and get to know how it works and incorporate it into your own well-being regime. But also, I've got an Instagram page which is called Paul Is Listening. So again, if you can access that, Paul Is Listening, and if you don't mind, if you could like it and do stuff, social media stuff with it, then again, that would be great. So the details of how to book onto it are there. There is a limited number of places, and they are going quite quickly. But if you're interested in joining me, then please do. And what I'll do is I'll take you through it in a lot more detail. We'll talk about other ways, again, of managing anxiety, because we don't need to be living this way and we need to do things that will boost our immunity and fight back against this doom narrative that we're all being exposed to by the media at the moment.
Absolutely. So I think that this Thursday is actually the 14th, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. And yeah. That was a deliberate error, just to see if you were paying attention. Clearly, yeah.
Which I am. So what we'll do, Paul, is following the show, I will make sure this gets posted in our Facebook group and our LinkedIn group and all that good stuff for our subscribers out there. So I'll make sure they have access to it through our community network, if you will. out there, especially our West Coasters, that would be because I assume that's UK time on Thursday.
That's quite, yes, 7 o'clock. So it will be, you're 8 hours in, behind the UK, aren't you?
Eight. So it would be 11 a.m., folks. So it would be 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time on Thursday. It would be that wonderful webinar by Mr. Paul Shepherd. Paul, Gritstone Support. So I know folks can find you at Gritstone Support. I mean, any other ways that you want to make sure our subscribers and our community out there can find out how to follow you or how to connect with you further?
Facebook page, Gritstone, but the main ones are the website and the Instagram page. That's great. And if people can, again, if they're interested in joining us, then we'll deal with it. We'll send you an invite. We'll make it happen. But those are the main areas, or phone or text or whatever, email, paul@gritstonesupport.co.uk. I'd love to hear from you. Any feedback would be very, very grateful. What you enjoyed, what you perhaps want to do more of or less of, would be very grateful. But I'd love to take you upon that offer if you're sincere, Justin, about coming back on, because there's lots of stuff that I'd like to share with you.
We will definitely find this. I mean, like I said, this is a new format for us. I'm sorry that we weren't able to get through everything today. You honestly just have so much great content. We couldn't get through it fast enough here. We will definitely have you back on the show again here very soon. I'll make sure and reconnect with you after the show. We'll find some dates that are out there that maybe work out a couple months from now, so you can come back and kind of finish things up here, because I know we had at least another three or four topics to get through for you.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, thank you very much indeed for inviting me, and it's been great. I've really enjoyed the experience. Sorry I didn't get much interaction with you, Bruce.
That's all right.
But hopefully, in the future, then that will happen. Well, thank you very much indeed, guys. And
thank you very much. Day. It was lovely having you on here today. Thank you again. And for all our listeners out there, you can find us, the Concierge Coaches Show, on all of our pages. We're out on LinkedIn. We're out on Instagram. We're out on Facebook. We're the Concierge Coaches Show. You can pretty much find us out there pretty much anywhere. Bruce, where can you be found?
I can be found at conciergecoach.net.
And I can be found at nimmergood.com. Thank you, everyone, for your time today. We look forward to connecting with you again next week here via Zoom live broadcast. We'll talk to you then, everyone. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.